KCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk. And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be taking a look at a number of national security and global security issues today that are confronting us at this very time. We're going to be taking a look at Israel, Iran, Turkey, North Korea, other nations as well to address the pressing issues of concern. It's our privilege to have with us today Frank Gaffney, the founder, president, and CEO of Center for Security Policy. They're a not-for-profit, nonpartisan educational corporation. He's also a national security expert. He served in the Reagan administration as the Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy. He's a lead author of War Footing, 10 Steps America Must Take to Prevail in the War for the Free World, co-author of Sharia, The Threat to America, and numerous other titles as well. Frank, welcome here to Crosstalk.
It's great to be with you. Thank you so much for having me.
This past Tuesday, President Trump just signed into law the 2018 National Defense Authorization Act. It's a $700 billion defense policy bill. We know the president's promised to pursue a major military buildup. As you have no doubt through the time of debate and so forth on this, do you believe that this NDAA, is it hitting the mark or is it missing the mark?
Well, it's hitting some of the mark, is the way I would put it. It's a positive step in the right direction after, really decades, if you think about it properly, decades of what has been at best kind of malign neglect and at worst, really a wrecking operation against our military by the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. The benign neglect, I should have said, the benign neglect of even the Bush administration and the first Bush administration and to a lesser degree the Clinton administration has cumulatively put the United States military in extremis. And I think very few Americans appreciate that. We hear a lot, and we'll be talking, I guess, in the course of the program about a lot of reasons why you don't want that to be the case. And they can't honestly believe we've let it get to be the case. But that is what has happened, in part because we have, I think, mostly neglected as a people the necessity of maintaining what my old boss Ronald Reagan used to call the practice of peace through strength. And the world gets to be a very dangerous place when America is not strong enough to discourage people from thinking that they can act aggressively against our interests with impunity.
We've got a long list of items that we're going to be discussing today, but let's begin with Israel. How significant, Frank, do you see this declaration by President Trump of moving the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem?
Well, as far as it goes, it's very significant, I think, in that it not only recognizes reality, of course, which is that the capital of Jerusalem is Israel's capital is the city of Jerusalem, and that has been the case since 1967 in the modern era. It has been the aspiration of Jews essentially since the sacking of the Second Temple. And it is, I believe, a reality that should be recognized, not just because it is reality, but because it gives an opportunity to change the paradigm that has gotten us absolutely nowhere positive, at least. It's actually made matters worse when we have conducted ourselves and we've encouraged others to conduct themselves as though something other than what happened occurred. Namely, Israel won repeatedly in a succession of wars, notably in 1967 when, as I say, it took over West Jerusalem in 73 rather, when it took over the rest of Jerusalem. It has had control of that capital city. And I think that it sends a message to the Palestinians, and for that matter to other Arabs, that the President of the United States can, and I hope will, change American policy, which has been basically to ignore that victory by Israel and to pretend that there's still some moral equivalency as well as strategic equivalency between the people who won those wars and the people who were defeated in them. And once that paradigm has changed, Jim, I think you have a chance for a real settlement to be achieved. As long as we indulge in this fantasy and this false narrative, specifically of the Palestinians, that they're entitled to all of this land and that they want to drive the Jews into the sea and they haven't actually been defeated, they're you know, ascendant, the more you're going to find them behaving in the way that we have all these years, which is to engage in jihadist violence, not just against Israelis, but against Americans and others, you know, who are on our side. That's not a sustainable or sensible policy.
Yeah, and some have said that this has only enraged the enemies of the Jewish state. It's enraging the enemies of the United States, this decision, with threats of even more terrorism. I mean, we have the Turkey's President Erdogan making veiled threats of killing every Jew. Is this something that's going to fan the flames of rage against Israel, against the United States?
Well, let me come to that question secondly. I just would make an initial point. You correctly characterized and point out that this event has helpfully illuminated the fact that Turkey is not a friend. Not a friend of Israel, not a friend of the United States. We have for many years considered them, and they have been, allies of the West. They've been NATO allies. They've been, forces for good in a very tough neighborhood. But that has basically ceased to be the case under the regime of Tayyip Erdogan. Erdogan has, I believe, fundamentally transformed, to use President Obama's phrase, fundamentally transformed a secular, albeit Muslim, democracy into a new Islamic republic. In fact, he hopes that it will become the caliphate. So when he's talking about killing all Jews, that's simply exposing the reality of his intentions and lays bare how reckless it is for Israel, or for this country for that matter, to believe he's actually a reliable partner. To your larger point, there is a danger, it seems to me, that if there are no costs to those who engage in violence against us or against our interests or against Israel for that matter, yes, you will see a continuing uptick in the violence. So I think making clear that there will be penalties associated with engaging in it is absolutely necessary. There's one other thing that I would recommend, and that is I would say President Trump should direct tomorrow that the U.S. consulate in West Jerusalem change the plaque outside the door, the front door, from consulate of the United States to embassy of the United States. Rather than wait 3, 4, 5, 10 years, whatever it's going to take to build a new embassy there, during the course of which time, of course, everybody who wants to try to gum that up will have a field day trying to do that. Present them with a fait accompli, in other words.
Yeah, yeah. What's happening also, to see what's happening within our own nation on this issue, is Nihad Awad, the executive director of the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE. I mean, he rose recently, just spoke at this rally outside the White House, and he said that President Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital was done to appease an extremist religious group. And I'm confident he's referring to evangelical Christians in all of this. And I wondered, how do we get to this point of Christians being called, intolerant, the religious extremists, while those who are yelling Allahu Akbar and bombing and killing are said to be representing a peaceful religion?
Yeah, look, I don't know who he was referring to. I don't know whether the extremist religious group that he was thinking of was Jewish, or whether it was Christian or fundamentalist or evangelical or some other, subset. What I will tell you is Niyad Awad is an operative of a designated terrorist organization called Hamas, which happens to run Gaza, of course, at the moment, and is an active participant in the war against Israel. How do I know that? Well, I know that because back in 1993, Niyad Awad was one of the participants from a group called the Islamic Association of Palestine that met with representatives of Hamas for the purposes of launching a new organization to work for Hamas in both political warfare and fundraising. And again, how I know that is because the FBI, back in the day when it did this sort of thing, as opposed to running political warfare against the President of the United States or a candidate for the presidency, as it has been doing of late, as you know, they actually wiretapped. They had under surveillance this organizational meeting of the group that came to be known as the Council on American-Islamic Relations.
Hmm.
The wiretaps of that meeting were introduced into evidence in a federal prosecution of the Holy Land Foundation,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Another Hamas operation. So we actually have the record of who set up CARE and how it was envisioned to operate on behalf of Hamas, and Niyad Awad was one of the participants in that organizational meeting. So he's a Hamas operative. We shouldn't treat him as anything other than, frankly, an enemy of this country, as far as I'm concerned.
And yet had an open door in the previous administration. We see the likes of those even within this nation who are what I consider to be provocateurs of resistance. The Linda Sarsours out there, her Islamic connections. And I caught her recent speech in New York, and she was talking about waking up every day filled with rage and provoking those in her audience and across the nation to invoke this rage. In my opinion, that's subverting. In order to subvert our constitutional rule of law in our country, do you sense this as being a security issue, this rage that's developing from within?
Well, yeah, she's simply taking to the next level what those like Niyad Awad and others in the Muslim Brotherhood's apparat in America have been doing for some time, which is what they call civilization jihad. And again, that Holy Land Foundation trial was very instructive because introduced into evidence along with that transcript of the wiretap by the FBI was a secret plan of the Muslim Brotherhood for, in their words, quote, destroying Western civilization from within, unquote. And Linda Sarsour and Niyad Awad and others in I think of it as Eddie McCarthy says, as Sharia supremacist project have been stealthily trying, as you say, to get inside the government and inside our churches and inside our financial sector and inside academia and inside Hollywood and media elsewhere and the like for the purposes of sort of burrowing them out from within and ultimately taking us down. So they should be fought at every turn.
Frank Gaffney is our guest here today from the Center for Security Policy. We're going to come back and we're going to take a look at what's happened in New York at the New York subway station just earlier this week, and also segueing into some of the threats coming from Iran and North Korea, Russia, China. We'll be back in 1 minute. This is Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, author and seminar speaker with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, we see right-to-life efforts all over the news these days. What does the Bible say about this?
Chris, the Bible is clear. Humankind is created in the image of God with great value and worth in His sight and is to be respected and protected. At conception, the embryo takes on human status, although not yet completely grown. The Bible discusses how the growing embryo as an individual has feelings and on some occasions even expresses itself. When a pregnant woman was injured in Bible times, such that the baby lost its life, there were consequences to be faced. The Bible doesn't give us all the details, but there's enough there to be certain that the unborn child is a viable human person and must be protected. Chris, the Back to Genesis way of thinking helps us understand modern issues.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
This is Crosstalk on BCY America. Frank Gaffney, our guest from the Center for Security Policy, and their website, centerforsecuritypolicy.org, centerforsecuritypolicy.org. You also have a presence on Facebook and Twitter, Frank?
We do. I believe it's hashtag Frank Gaffney and at Frank Gaffney, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. And also at Secure Freedom. Facebook is Facebook.com/Secure Freedom. One of the areas that we are seeing is this goal of Sharia in the United States, and we know Sharia is not compatible with our United States Constitution. The two cannot exist together. And now, just earlier this week, as you know, Frank, we had this Sharia supremacist from Bangladesh trying to kill many innocents in a New York City subway.
We did indeed. You know, just to go back for a moment to Linda Sarsour, she's kind of the transitional bridge between the guys who are just stealthily burrowing away, building mosques and other incubators for jihadism in this country. And let me emphasize, not all Muslims subscribe to Sharia, thank God, and not all Muslims are therefore part of the problem. But many of those who do, unfortunately, embrace it and believe it's God's will that they impose it on the rest of us. So the Brotherhood is building mosques for that purpose, to try to promote that. Linda Sarsour is out there telling us, well, those of us who are listening to her, who are not susceptible to her calls to, you know, resistance or even jihad, are hearing from her that, you know, things like female genital mutilation, for example, is not part of Islam, is not part of Sharia, not true. But then you have people like this this fellow who went to the violent stage of jihad and sought to kill a good number of Americans, perhaps in Times Square. Fortunately, was unable to do that, but not for want of trying. And what we have to understand, I believe, is that whichever form the jihad takes, and unfortunately, there's increasingly, I think, evidence, notably in Europe at the moment, that the more numerous these Sharia supremacists are in a given population, the more aggressive they become and the more prone they are to going full on into the violent stages of jihad. But all of these are a threat to a constitutional republic like ours. They are obliged, as they see it, by Sharia, by God's will, Allah's will, to overthrow and destroy governments like ours, in which men make laws as opposed to them being divinely dictated in the form of Sharia. It's an incredibly important moment to be understanding this. And if you think what I've just said sounds hyperbolic, it's an exaggeration, I urge your listeners to do something that I think will help equip them to both have clarity about this in their own right, but also to talk to others about it, and that is to look at what is happening in Europe at the moment.
Yeah.
Everything I've talked about is in full flower there.
Yes, and so many tragic examples there. I'd like to segue onto Iran, and we know our UN ambassador, Nikki Haley, she's been quite effective fighting for our interest in the United Nations, but just yesterday she indicated that she has irrefutable evidence that Iran deliberately violated the so-called Iran deal. President Trump has taken a whole lot of criticism, as you know, for his declaring the termination of this deal if Congress doesn't toughen this thing up. What's your perspective on this Iran deal? Do we have any information as to what Nikki Haley's referring to as irrefutable evidence?
I have not seen the evidence she's speaking of. I think what she's probably pointing out, that though, is that Iran has been collaborating with North Korea to acquire nuclear weapons technology and capabilities, as well as the missiles with which to deliver them. I think the evidence is becoming more and more apparent that this is translating into real capabilities for both the North Korean regime, which needs the money, and sadly, Barack Obama, in his wisdom, decided to give $150 $6 billion to Iran, at least some of which I think is now migrating to the North Koreans. And for their part, the North Koreans are sharing with the Iranians nuclear missiles and, it appears, possibly even nuclear weapons themselves.
Wow. Wow. Well, we know we've got, you talked about Europe a bit ago, we've got the UK, France, Germany. They're saying we're committed to the full implementation of this nuclear agreement, the Iran deal. Are we, as a nation, the United States, becoming at greater and greater odds with these European nations?
Well, we may be. I, as you mentioned at the outset, I had the privilege of working for President Reagan, and there were moments when he was very much at odds, and therefore the United States was at odds with our European friends. I remember vividly there was a moment when the Europeans were determined to have a pipeline built by the Soviet Union, with their money, by the way, and technology, into Europe that would have made the Europeans approximately as dependent on gas supplies from than the Soviet Union as they are now from Russia. And what President Reagan said, that is unacceptable. Mm-hmm. It is intolerable to have a country that is a hostile enemy to the West providing a very substantial portion of Western Europe's energy resources. And he was able to oppose what they were trying to do, and ultimately it came a cropper until after the Berlin Wall fell and they busily restarted that project. But my point is this. I think American leadership, if it's properly grounded in a sensible policy approach, should be pursued even if our allies in Europe oppose it, because frequently the policies that they prefer are not sound and are not in certainly our interests, and I would argue not in theirs as well.
There is, as we brought North Korea into the picture here, especially with Iran, there's just a whole lot of concern. Kim Jong-un planning perhaps another missile launch this Sunday, marking the anniversary of Kim Jong-il's death. He certainly hasn't spared demonstrations of his missile technology and perhaps nuclear capability. And we know that there's some very strong and severe tensions between the U.S. and North Korea. Do you anticipate any subsiding of these tensions, or do you see them further escalating? Is there a way out of this? Is it diplomatic, or is it the peace through strength that you spoke of earlier?
Well, we have sought a diplomatic solution for a long time, and mostly diplomacy has been used by the North Koreans to buy time and to, in some cases, even obtain the resources, food, fuel, actual financial assistance that has enabled them to continue to build the threats that now confront us. Again, nuclear weapons, even thermonuclear weapons, and the means by which to deliver them to our country, the entirety of our country. So I think one would have to say that diplomacy has been a failure to this point, and I don't fancy the alternative to that because it can be very, very costly in lives and so many other measures. But we may no longer have a choice, I'm sorry to say, but to act preemptively to protect our country against the sorts of threats that are now present, including one which, by the way, has gotten almost no attention at all, and that is one that could be aboard satellites that the North Koreans have orbiting the Earth, overflying this country several times a day, satellites which could, in fact, be the delivery vehicle for what's known as an electromagnetic pulse attack on this country, which could have a simply catastrophic effect on our electric grid, even just a single weapon detonated in space. And as a result, literally, I'm afraid, destroy America as we've known it.
Wow. What if any culpability does China have in regarding this threat from North Korea to the United States?
Well, it's a great question. For the longest time, we've had successive administrations, Republican and Democratic, telling us that China is our partner in trying to contain this threat from North Korea. I've never believed it, and increasingly it's now apparent that the Chinese have in fact been enabling this threat. I mean, as you mentioned, there may be another missile test here shortly. There have been a whole succession of them. Have increasing capabilities, and we believe with advances in nuclear weapons technology, I mentioned a thermonuclear device, for example, that an impoverished, backwards country could not do by itself. It has benefited from help from, I believe, most especially the Chinese. We've seen transporter erector launchers for mobile missiles supplied by the Chinese. We've seen missile canisters that appear to be of Chinese design that are on those transporter erector launchers. We've seen some evidence that there are missiles inside those canisters may well be Chinese supplied as well. And these are, let's be clear, aimed at America. So far from being a partner, I believe China is definitely enabling this threat, and I think believes it's very much in its interest to have that threat metastasize even further.
Yeah, so it seems so bizarre that we're constantly partnering with China in these trade deals as if, you know, they're buddy-buddy partners with this nation here, where in fact is what you're saying is going on behind the scenes is that they are very much, I mean, we're talking communist China, very much a threat to the United States.
Indeed. And quite apart from the North Korean sort of gambit. This is, I believe, part of the Chinese strategy. I think they're using North Korea, and indeed they're using, to some extent, the jihadists as vehicles for essentially distracting us from the increasing and ever more dangerous capabilities they themselves have to threaten our country. The more we're tied up with the North Koreans, the more we're tied up with the Islamists, the better for the Chinese. And they are stealing a march on us in almost every area of military power, whether it's nuclear weapons, whether it's anti-space capabilities or space control capabilities, to say nothing of a blue water navy that's quite modern and increasingly capable, military forces on the ground and in the air, fifth generation stealth fighter aircraft, for example, some of which they've stolen the plans for from us. So this is a very formidable adversary with something we've never seen before, certainly since World War II, which is a first world economy fueling its military buildup and truly global ambitions.
Frank Gaffney is our guest here today on Crosstalk. Our number is 800-733-9829. Kind of giving a survey of security issues. We talk about certainly Israel, what's going on in the Middle East, Iran, North Korea, China, where I want to just get a word in on Russia here after the break as well. But give us a call, 800-733-9829. We'll be right back.
Nearly every common behavioral problem is considered to be a disease in American culture today. Gambling, overeating, and certainly drugs and alcohol. But God's Word lovingly tells us the truth about the very heart of addiction. Yet the Bible is a neglected resource for those who suffer from these so-called addictions. One of the reasons for this is that people choose to believe the theories and ideas of mankind that the disease renders them powerless to overcome the problem. However, a Christian is not powerless and has the indwelling power of the Holy Spirit to enable them to say no to choices that will mentally enslave them. In the book, The Heart of Addiction, biblical counselor Mark Shaw confronts these life-dominating sins and provides biblical tools to help us examine our heart's motives at the root of addiction and how to obtain victory. The Heart of Addiction is available for a donation of $15 or more to VCY America. Ask for it when you call 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on BCY America. Frank Gaffney is our guest today. He is president, he's founder, CEO of Center for Security Policy. And we're talking about, we're kind of giving a survey of security issues today. And maybe you've got a comment, a question you'd like to ask as it pertains to the threat of North Korea. Certainly an EMP attack, a concern here for our nation's electric grid. Talking about certainly the threat posed by China, Iran as well. We see the threats being made even with the due to the saying of the moving of the embassy and recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Our number here to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. The website for our guest is that of centerforsecuritypolicy.org. centerforsecuritypolicy.org. Russia. We've got Russia and China both are aggressively expanding their nuclear arsenal. Frank, is the U.S. keeping up with this? Do we adequately recognize the threat from these nations?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that question, because this has been one of my concerns for a long time. In fact, back when I had the privilege of working for President Reagan, I was responsible for nuclear weapons and arms control policy in the Pentagon, and that was the heyday, really, of our attentiveness to the need to have a reliable, safe, effective, and therefore credible nuclear deterrent. And it may come as unbelievable to your audience, but more or less ever since, I left the Pentagon in the beginning of 1988, more or less ever since, we have been neglecting our nuclear arsenal. In fact, we haven't even tested effectively and underground an actual nuclear weapon since 1992.
Wow.
We've scarcely done any modernization to speak of. We are living, in short, off of the legacy of what we did during the Reagan years to rebuild our aging deterrent at that time. And it's now well beyond its service life, its design life. The number of weapons that we have is smaller than it has been since very early on in the atomic age, but it is increasingly obsolete, and the investment that's needed to be made to upgrade it, to make it once again, an effective deterrent against the sorts of arsenals that, as you say, have been building aggressively in Russia and China and, to a lesser degree, North Korea, of course, and Iran, India, Pakistan, and elsewhere, is something that is an egregious act of malfeasance, as far as I'm concerned, by, again, successive administrations. Barack Obama, of course, took the cake because he was convinced that we were going to rid the world of nuclear weapons. He didn't have to actually invest much in them. The problem was that he envisioned starting that global disarmament with ours.
My.
And nobody else was following suit. And as a result, Donald Trump is confronting a situation in which we have to make a very concerted, very costly, and very sustained effort to rebuild both the forces themselves and the industrial capability needed to support them.
Let's go to the phone lines. We've got Jim calling from Nebraska. Jim, you're on the air.
Yes. I read something or saw something on the Internet that said that they believe most of California is already owned by China, and that a lot of the housing skyrocketing is because so much of the land is, everything's being bought up by China, and even the fires, some of it could have been done in order to encourage people to leave.
Okay, thank you for raising that issue. What about China's purchase? I haven't heard that they've bought up most of California, but we do know, I believe it's Idaho and many strategic locations around the United States. Don't we have China ownership of property here in the U.S.?
Well, the Chinese have been buying a lot of things. I think somewhat less worrying is real estate, though, as you say, and the caller does, strategic real estate can be quite problematic. What's of special concern to me, though, is the investment they've been making in technology companies, buying those lock, stock, and barrel. Speaking of California, Silicon Valley has watched the Chinese coming in on shopping sprees that are really remarkable. And the trouble is that oftentimes what they're looking for are not simply technologies and investment plays that will prove to be profitable in a commercial sense or give them an advantage in terms of various, you know, future sales of products to the United States or for their own, that matter, their own people. Rather, they're looking for technologies that may well be applicable militarily as well. And part of this, again, hard as this is to believe, our government has really not done a very good job of monitoring these sorts of transactions. There's a group that's gotten some notoriety, actually, of late, of course, in connection with Hillary Clinton's sale of 20% of our uranium supplies to the Russians, a group called the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, or CFIUS, as it's known. This group is supposed to be vetting these sorts of transactions if there's likely to be a national security implication. They have largely failed at that job. On the occasions when they have actually interjected in opposition to a transaction, it's rare and it's the exception to the rule. And as a result, whether it's commercial real estate or other kinds of strategic transactions involving land in our country, what unquestionably the Chinese are doing is buying up what they can get in the way of our seed corn technologies. And in a way, worse yet, they're stealing what they are unable to buy.
Jim, thank you for the call. And again, here we have just a grand announcement just a matter of a couple months ago about Foxconn, this multinational electronics firm based in China, looking to make almost, in essence, a second Silicon Valley in southeast Wisconsin, building here in not in the very near future as well. Again, that's a technology company. Eric is calling from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Eric, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. I would like to ask you and your guest if there is or has been anyone that's presented a counter plan for the Sharia law in the United States that will be worth mentioning and checking out.
Well, I thank you for it, and I'll have our guest respond, but a counter plan to Sharia is let's just stick to our constitutional. Let's have our constitutional republic because the two documents are not compatible. That's my viewpoint on this. Frank, any comments here to our listener?
Well, you're absolutely right, of course. Most of us are unaware of just how completely anti-constitutional, not just un, but anti-constitutional Sharia is. And this is one of the things that makes so worrying what I described earlier of this sort of civilization jihad, this effort to sort of insinuate Sharia into our country where they can, notably into our courts. And an important counter effort that we have championed at the Center for Security Policy, and people can find out more about all of our work at securefreedom.org, is a piece of legislation that is called the American Laws for American Courts Initiative. It's a term that most people say, well, duh. But unfortunately, what the Sharia supremacists have been trying to do is to get our court system to accommodate Sharia, or in some cases they've been seeking to create their own parallel court system where Sharia is meted out, as in the United Kingdom, where there are now some 87 Sharia courts that operate side by side with English common law courts. So this American Laws for American Courts legislation, which has been adopted, I believe, in now something like 11 or 12 states around the United States, simply says that no foreign law, it doesn't specifically mention Sharia, but it's one example. But no foreign law can be used in the courts of this particular state if it violates the constitutional rights of those, you know, engaged in any kind of litigation, or state public policy. And so it's a way to beat back this idea that Sharia can somehow begin to be used in our court system instead of American constitutional law. And I think it's a very important initiative, and hope the rest of the states will adopt it.
It's called America's Laws for American Courts?
American Laws for American Courts.
Great. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you. Yep, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Sharon is next in Wisconsin. You're on the air. Hello, Sharon.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Okay, thank you.
Sharon, please go ahead.
Thank you, Jim. Okay. Hi. Okay, I'm calling in regard to...
Okay, Sharon, please don't listen to your radio, okay? We're on delay, so listen to the phone, please.
Okay. I recall when it just brought to light something I ran across in the pipeline that was being brought between... 8-lane highway coming through to Canada, going through Wisconsin partially, and I'm wondering about that because there was a statement here from our senator.
Okay.
Do you believe the president should approve the Keystone XL pipeline to bring 830,000 barrels of crude oil from Canada to the refineries in the United States? Mm-hmm. And we've also had a lot of problems here with the barrels.
Okay, let's have our guest comment on that issue. Did you have any security concerns, Frank, with the likes of a Keystone XL or pipelines delivering oil from Canada to other states or to refineries?
Well, I guess the question that is sort of being put in that specific context applies more generally, really, doesn't it? We are an open society. We have so much of our infrastructure, whether it's gas or oil pipelines, or whether it's the reservoirs that provide drinking water, or whether it's our food supply, or whether it's the power plants that, as I say, provide essentially virtually all of our needs in our 21st century American society, that are highly vulnerable to attack by individuals who wish to at least interrupt the services provided by such resources. And, you know, we've been blessed as a country that they have not been targeted more to date than they have, and it is a concern to me, I have to say, particularly that bit about the electric grid, because whether it's that electromagnetic pulse that we talked about earlier in the context of North Korea, or a cyber attack, or just plain physical sabotage, like an incident that took place out in the San Jose, California area back in 2013, where we very nearly lost a major transformer substation complex to a physical sabotage. We've got a very vulnerable infrastructure there.
Thank you, Sharon, for the call. We're up against the break here. Frank Gaffney is our guest. Our number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. We'll be back with more calls in just a minute.
For the Worldview Weekend Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewtimes.com. Have you ever heard people say, well, secondary issues really don't matter? Well, my friends, I believe secondary issues do matter. Now, of course, we know there are the essentials of what it means to be a Christian, the essentials of the gospel, faith, and repentance. These are essentials. But then people say beyond that, there are secondary issues, and they're not really vital. Well, you know what? All of the Word of God is vital. In fact, the Bible is very clear that it is the entire Word of God that is God-breathed. It is inspired, and it is profitable for reproof and correction, and that the man of God may be thoroughly equipped for every good work. There are vital issues related to family, church, government, and many other issues. We can't say these are secondary issues. Nothing in the Bible is a secondary issue. Yes, there are vital issues for the gospel, and there are vital issues for living the Christian life.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Frank Gaffney is our guest today. He's founder, president, and CEO of Center for Security Policy and centerforsecuritypolicy.org. We'll get you to their site and lots of information. Let's see. We've got Kevin, who is next. Go ahead, Kevin. You're on the air.
Hi, I can hear you now. Yeah, in the context of what you were discussing earlier with foreign influences in the United States, I would be much more concerned. I am much more concerned about the influences posed by foreign countries through the campaign contributions through the Citizens United decision. I think that is a much more tangible and realistic way we're going to begin seeing influence from other countries on our own political system. And there doesn't seem to be anything that these conservatives want to do to prevent that.
Okay. Any thoughts on that, Frank?
Not an expert on election law or campaign financing, but my understanding is that the foreign entities, foreign nationals for that matter, are not supposed to contribute to campaigns in the United States, federal campaigns at the very least. And so it's not to say that it isn't done. I think there was a lot of evidence that foreign nationals were contributing to Barack Obama's campaign in small dollar credit card payments that seemed very squirrely, to me at least. But I'm not sure that that's probably the most important way in which those foreign influences can be exhibited. I think of greater concern, to be honest with you, is foreign entities either doing deals with or making investments in companies in this country that can then make legally campaign contributions, or for that matter, simply go to their elected representatives and say, listen, you need to help me because we've got a deal with country X, and they more or less are certain to get help from their representative if they've got a large payroll or a large workforce, at least, that might be affected by that that transaction.
Well, the fact is that now through these super PACs, because of the Supreme Court decision, there is no way to tell where this campaign money is coming from.
Yeah, and
I think it's really irrelevant whether or not it's going to Democrats or Republicans. The fact is it's a bad thing to have that influence in our country from other countries.
Well,
and it seems to be the conservatives that are allowing this to happen.
Well, Kevin, part of the issue with this also is the fact that you've had nonprofit groups under the Citizens United that were going to have to turn over donor lists if they participated in any aspect, 501c4s, and there was grave concern on that aspect. We're just about out of time. I want to pick up one last call, which is Ron in Racine, Wisconsin. Ron, you're on the air.
Yes. I'm thinking about how America seems like it's kind of like in a meltdown. We're really getting overwhelmed with situations that could really destroy America.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've even got these cities in America that's kind of sanctioned from law.
Yeah, sanctuary cities?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's a threat.
Yeah, it is. And let's thank you for that call. Let's just hit that for a moment, if we could, Frank. Sanctuary cities and what's looked at as perhaps some action on illegal immigration here in our nation.
Yeah, this is a part of a larger question that we might usefully talk about if we had time. That is what's happening south of our borders. There is a lot of evidence of not only very hostile governments, notably Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela and that of the Castros in Cuba, and to varying degrees others, enabling penetration by some of the countries we've been talking about in the course of this program, the Russians, the Chinese, the Iranians, as well as terrorist organizations like Hamas, Hezbollah, and even ISIS. These are problems that when our border is porous, as it remains, we invite people coming in from one or more of these countries, sometimes with Venezuelan passports, not Iranian or Syrian or what have you. And I think enhancing our borders security is absolutely imperative, as is ending this practice of cities or in some cases even states like California essentially deciding they're not going to follow federal immigration law. And as to this question of whether we're going to see Congress compound this problem greatly, mm-hmm. The Democrats have, of course, refused to help President Trump secure the border. They're now insisting that he adopt an amnesty for the so-called Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, persons, and probably their family members, their chain migration extended families. There's a real problem here that unless that border is secure, and unless we've prevented or made it much more difficult for people to get employed here, if they can't demonstrate that they're here legally through what's known as the E-Verify system. And unless we stop this chain migration and visa lotteries and visa overstays, we're likely to see an amnesty do what it did back in Ronald Reagan's days, to his great regret. It serves as a magnet for more illegal folks to come here and greatly compound our problem in the expectation that they, too, in due course, will get an amnesty. That shouldn't happen. Republican-led Congress shouldn't let it happen. I hope they won't, but it certainly would be great if they could hear from audiences like yours telling them, don't give the DACA individuals an amnesty, and thereby making things worse.
And folks, to communicate with your congressman, it's 202-225-3121, 202-225-3121, your senators at 224-3121. I know it's not fair, but we've got 45 seconds. Let me just ask you this here quick, Frank, and that is we keep hearing about the need to drain the swamp, but it seems that at the same time we have the likes of General H.R. McMaster, a security advisor, Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State. To the average person, they just seem to appear to be sabotaging President Trump's foreign agenda. Any concern there?
Well, I hope it is clear to the average citizen. It certainly is to me, and I'm hopeful that it will be as well to the president, because he needs to drain the swamp, starting with some of those individuals you've mentioned and perhaps others in his cabinet. The swamp is very much rising, as you can see in these stories about the special prosecutor and the partisan work that he's doing. I think of it as kind of Hillary Clinton's campaign doing business as a independent counsel. Yeah. But it's a very serious problem in Washington. We need Donald Trump, I hope, to do as he promised, just to drain the swamp.
Frank Gaffney with us today from Center for Security Policy. Thank you so much for joining us on the broadcast.
Pleasure's mine. Thank you.
And, folks, again, the website is centerforsecuritypolicy.org, and also on facebook.com, Secure Freedom, Twitter at Secure Freedom, and at Frank Gaffney. Our time is gone. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.